At his press conference yesterday, President Trump had some pointed words for the Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. Turmoil. Chaos, he called it. The Ninth Circuit issued the opinion that's held up the president's executive order on immigration, the one which revokes the visas for visitors from seven predominantly Muslim countries. Now, Trump has lashed out at the federal judiciary before. Earlier, he criticized what he called the, quote, broken legal system and said even a, quote, bad high school student would rule in his favor. Now, some legal scholars say that Trump is undermining the judiciary, but history shows the president and the court system have a record of not getting along. For a look at that, let's go to Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly. They're historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Brian and Nathan, welcome.
Hey, Magna.
So, first of all, this isn't necessarily the first time that the executive has clashed with the judiciary. So, should we just not be surprised that this is happening?
Go back for us, Nathan.
No. Conflicts between presidents and the courts are a constant, right? I mean, you can go back as far as Marbury versus Madison in 1800, right? And there, you've had a number of cases prior to 1800 where the courts are reviewing cases, but the meaning of judicial review really does come about in this 1800 case. Really quickly, you have John Adams, who's lost the election to Thomas Jefferson, and he simply wants the right to pick William Marbury as a kind of midnight judge for a court in D.C., and the Supreme Court under John Marshall basically says that he has the authority to pick the justice but doesn't have the right to have that authority protected once he's basically lost office. The only powers that the court has are those that are outlined in the Constitution, not that are outlined by Congress. So the fact that you have a president who wants to simply make an appointment in the 11th hour is by no means beyond the reach of the court to essentially refute.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that that decision sticks, Magna, is Marshall was brilliant. He basically established the authority for courts to review legislation by, in essence, giving up authority, saying, yeah, you know, that legislation really didn't allow us to do this.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, so let's talk about some other cases that really help us define moments in history that this tension comes to the fore. I think one of the key ones is with President Abraham Lincoln and habeas corpus, right?
That's right. And Lincoln has been criticized by many for suspending habeas corpus during the Civil War. But after all, it was a civil war, and he had a very practical problem. It was very hard to tell who was on whose side, especially in border states like Maryland. So, he needed to hold people, and he said under the president's powers during wartime, he was suspending habeas corpus. He ran into an old nemesis of his,
Robert Taney.
Justice Taney, exactly.
Right.
And Taney said, no, you know, the legislature has to do this. And Lincoln, you know, he toughed it out. He said, nope, you know, I'm not going to do that. I don't care what you say, Justice Taney. Now, the good news for the country is the legislature, the Congress, did meet soon after that and, in fact, gave the president the ability to do that legislatively, which made it more judicially kosher.
Okay, but let me just jump in here. But I mean, so there was a period of time, though, where Abraham Lincoln was forcing a constitutional crisis, though, if he's just
absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Right.
But Magna, yeah. you have to understand that the Civil War was a bit of a constitutional crisis as
there
well.
There was that, too.
But the
court here is saying that, you know, Civil War or not, the rule of law must stand and the president must follow it, right?
No, that's absolutely right.
Right.
And we've had many other moments that we can go through. I'd love to fast forward to the present, even though we're both historians.
Do so. Go ahead.
I think that what is happening right now is we look at the Ninth Circuit ruling on Donald Trump's executive order that some call a travel ban. I think what's happening now is we're seeing that words, process, and evidence actually really matter. And all through the campaign, right, it seemed like, well, words just didn't matter. Who was going to respond? Well, the courts are responding. And once something gets to the courts, what Donald Trump actually has said in the past turns out to be a very important part of that Ninth Circuit decision. The process of how that executive order has been implemented really matters. The fact that Trump did not consult with the key agencies ahead of time. And most importantly, evidence, right? The Ninth Circuit, at least the three judges, said, look, we're willing to consider what you're saying, Justice Department, but you need to show us some actual evidence that there really is a threat to security here. And if you don't want to make it public, we will consider that in camera behind closed doors, but you need evidence. And so I think we're facing the first time that Donald Trump's words are coming back to haunt him, because the government, at least up till now, has operated with certain processes and based on certain fact-based evidence. And they're all coming together right now.
So my backstory brother is a little bit more optimistic than I am on this one. Mm-hmm. And I see actually in Trump's maneuver something that feels very similar to what Teddy Roosevelt tried and failed to do around the turn of the century, around 1912 actually. You know, when he tried, and he in this case failed to win the presidential nomination, he still raised the question of a much more populist engagement with the judiciary, right? He wanted to be able to recall judges, to have popular elections for federal and state judges, and this commitment to a kind of popular sovereignty basically ran on the idea that the people should have the influence over the judiciary. And what I see now in President Trump's efforts through, you know, delegitimizing the judiciary, through his tweeting, through his attempts to speak directly to the American people is, in effect, a kind of Rooseveltian move, right? The idea that the American people should be able to check their judges and then in some cases be run by a very charismatic and strong president.
I mean, I can see what both of you are saying, but to me, does the fact that both truths exist simultaneously not speak to the fundamental strength of what's written in the Constitution, and that the Republic has survived these tensions as they've played out repeatedly over various administrations?
Well, it has, but I want to go back to Nathan's good point about Teddy Roosevelt. You know, he was considered a progressive, a liberal reformer, especially in 1912. And what he was saying, even more specifically, was that the people had the ability, quite literally, to overturn a specific decision by a court. Now, he was referring to the state courts. But that's really pretty radical stuff. And if you're listening, Donald Trump, I agree with Nathan. Teddy Roosevelt sounds a lot like you in this case. and what, you know, the only reason that Madison v. Marbury has been listened to is tradition and precedent. And we know if Donald Trump is one thing, he's a disruptive force who has never met a tradition and precedent that he doesn't want to disrupt.
The other thing about how some of these conflicts between the judiciary and the president play out has a lot to do with who's in Congress, right? When when Congress has the back of Lincoln in 1861, that makes a huge difference, right? Roosevelt is able to, Freddie Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt is able
to. We'll tell you about Freddie on the next show.
The long lost brother.
or even, you know, Andrew Jackson in 1832, right? He's able to win in his debates about Indian removal. Jefferson in 1807, again, wins against the court relative to embargo on U.S. goods because he has Congress behind him. So in this instance, it'll be very curious to see what happens when you have a Republican Congress, you have a Republican president, you even will have a predominantly Republican judiciary at the Supreme Court level, at least. And it's going to, in very real terms, I think, set the tone of how these conflicts between the White House and the courts play out.
But to go back to the founding, I'll point out that there was a reason that the founders made the House of Representatives stand for election every 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Because behind even the Congress itself is public opinion. And it remains to be seen how that public opinion influences Congress in real time over the next 6 months.
Well, Brian Ballow and Nathan Connolly are historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. We only touched upon some of these other key moments and cases, but folks, listen to the podcast and you get a much deeper perspective on it. Brian and Nathan, it's been great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Magnet.